each candidate is going to have 3 minutes for their opening remarks. We did backstage select the order randomly, and we just drew names out of a hat. And our first candidate to provide us with opening remarks is Kate.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here today. It's a pleasure to share the stage with these candidates once again, and on home turf, just a few doors down from my studio. I'll start by saying this, Picton is my home. When people ask me why I decided to run in this election, and why I decided to run for the NDP, the answer is simple. I care about our home. I care about my neighbors. I care about our collective future. This care is what has led me to stand up in a ways that allow me to shape the future into one that is safer, greener, and more equitable, and more just, whether it's across the street or on the other side of the planet. When my daughter's soccer team needed a coach, I stood up and took to the sidelines to guide them on the field. When I noticed PCI had a large and underused green space that could deeply enrich the lives of students, myself and other generous community members mobilized in partnership with the school to make that dream a reality. When members of our community came to me, horrified as their families in Gaza were subjected to genocide, and Ryan Williams' office ignored their calls asking why Canada continued to send weapons to Israel, I took to the streets to organize in support of the Palestinian people and to amplify the voices of my community. And it's been clear to me, I am not the only one who cares. In fact, care is what I have seen the most of over the last 4 weeks on the campaign trail. Care for everyday people, not millionaires, but people who live here in Picton. People like us who have children in public schools, own small businesses that are directly affected by tariffs, and people who have always looked out for one another. And the NDP is the only party that progresses policies that reflect our care. Care for the middle class led the NDP to push forward a dental care bill that reduced the cost of dental visits from $150 to $7. Care for young parents led the NDP to create a $7 a day child care program. Care for families like mine who are feeling the cost of eggs, milk, bread, and butter on our bottom line is why the NDP is working to establish a cap on grocery prices for daily essentials. Over the course of tonight's debate, you'll hear the other parties commit to maintaining these policies as if they are their own. But it is important that you remember these policies, the things that put money in your pocket and food on your table, the things that you rely on when you are sick or underemployed or in need of support. These are the things that the NDP stands for. I hope in this election, you'll vote for the party that's actually in it for you.
Thank you, Kate. Erica, you have the floor.
Critical thinking Canadians are done with divisionary politics getting in the way of actual progressive legislation that would help us. We need leadership and unity. We need a goal and a plan to get there. So we need to work together. Right now, we have a huge issue with our politics. It's built on hate and division. And I think it was Lincoln who said that a country divided cannot stand. And that's where we're at. The more that they divide us, the easier it will be to take over us. And that's the plan right now. These economic tariffs that we're experiencing are causing us problems, and they're going to continue to cause problems. This is why we need to stand together to get the job done. We need to work together to get the job done. We need to cross party lines, have conversations, put the legislation forward that we need. But we're not doing that right now. We're fighting, we're bickering. We're comparing who's got bigger crowd sizes. We don't care about who enacts the great legislation. We just need it done. Something that the Greens do best is work across party lines. Hey, we only have 2 seats in the House, so we need to work harder than everybody else. So why can't we ask the same for politicians? We know that they're getting paid enough to do that, so why can't they work? Why can't they put forward legislation that's going to actually help us? Canadian, are used to being resilient. You gotta be tough to be Canadian. I've heard that and it's stuck with me for years. And what does that mean? We're resilient, but we're also willing to work through our differences because we know Canada is built on small, rural communities that have to work through differences just to survive. And we need to survive right now. Beyond that, we need to thrive. 3.5 years ago, I was here with MP Williams, and we all made promises. We made promises to change. Except for tonight, I see that some of the questions that have been submitted are regarding housing and affordable living and healthcare. These are conversations that we had 4 years ago. These are conversations that we had 8 years ago. So why are we still having the same conversations? I'm asking whoever gets elected to come back in 4 years and say, hey, we did it. We're 4 years into the plan of building new houses. We're 4 years into our plan of getting everybody a doctor, making sure that our folks that are accessing disability have the same rights as the rest of us and opportunities to work and thrive. We know that preventative health care, like pharmacare and mental health access and dental care, keep people in the workforce for longer. It's harder to get back in the workforce when you leave. I'm from the county, and I love it here, and that's why I stood up to make sure that we had great representation. And I'm gonna tell you from the amount of paperwork that is on this table right now that all of our candidates are now standing up because they know what they need to bring to the table to effectively communicate our issues and get us the job done.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, you have the stage.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And I want to first say to Erica, thank you, because you said a lot of things that need to be said in here, and that's the purpose of these debates tonight and bringing us all together. It's a really good conversation because this is the most important election we'll have in Canada in a long time. I want to begin with something that matters deeply to me and the future of Prince Edward County. This is something that's been on my mind for a long time. Only 14% of the residents of Prince Edward County are under the age of 19. That's 40% lower than the rest of Canada. And that tells us something very important in Prince Edward County. Young people are finding it harder and harder to stay. The cost of living is up, housing is out of reach, and the dream of building a life here, where you grew up, where your family lives, is slipping away. I was knocking on one of the doors in Picton not too long ago, and one of the residents there told me she's spending 100% of her income on rent. My first question in the House of Commons as a member of Parliament was on the housing market for Prince Edward County to the Prime Minister, where that month when I got elected, September 2021, the average house price for the realtor sold signs that month was $1.2 million. Unaffordable. We have to work together to fix affordability this election. We have to make sure we put more money in people's pockets, we stop inflationary spending, and we look after the real issues. And here's some real issues that I feel are part of Prince Edward County that if I'm elected, I want to work on. Number one, Highway 49. Yeah. It's a crucial road in desperate need of repair. Anyone goes down there, it needs to be fixed right away. Pinecrest development in Bloomfield, 55 seniors units. It should have been the example of what we could do in Canada with an old school, with old infrastructure. It needs to be finished. It's been so long it changed names. It was Love Song, now it's Pinecrest. When we look at doctors, we have a brand new hospital in Picton, but we're short 55 doctors in this region. We have a program that will train, internationally trained doctors already here in Canada, and make sure we equip our hospital with the tools they need. And I fought for your region as an MP for Traverse Point when this government tore that commercial fishing village down, and we had petitions and we fought on behalf of people. When it comes to what we're going to do, it's 15% income tax cut across the board. We're going to keep dental care, pharmacare, and child care. We're going to eliminate the electric vehicle mandate, which right now is in place without a debate in Parliament, which is going to make you buy an electric car for your family, no matter the choice, no matter what you think is best. And we're going to make sure we get rid of C18 so that County FM and Picton Gazette can be back on Facebook and social media, where 85% of people get school bus cancellations and they get their news. In other words, the real question I have for you in the ballot box this election, is it time for change? Is it time to change what we do, how we do it, and take a look after the residents of Prince Edward County? Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. Chris, you have the honors of closing out the opening remarks.
Thank you. After a 36-year career in local journalism, I've gotten to know the people, the stories, and the issues that matter to you all across this riding. And that means Belleville, Picton, all across Prince Edward County and Quinte West. I've always been there for the triumphs and tragedies and serious issues that affect all our residents and will represent all interests in Ottawa as your Member of Parliament in a Mark Carney government. As a 6-year municipal councillor in the city of Belleville, I understand the issues and challenges of municipalities, such as those facing Prince Edward County, and I've advocated on behalf of our municipalities on issues of funding and the environment, among many other issues. I currently chair the Hastings County Community and Human Services, and I serve as well on the Emergency Medical Services Committee. In that role, I spoke in favor and supported the ambulance agreement between Hastings County EMS and Prince Edward County. That issue alone has greatly reduced ambulance response times and enhanced the safety of residents in Prince Edward County in all areas of the county. This election is the most important one of our lifetime. Mark Carney is the best, most qualified, and trustworthy person to lead Canada during these turbulent and dangerous times. We're hearing it time and time again at the doors. Prime Minister Carney's platform, released just on the weekend, called Canada Strong, is to unite, secure, protect, and build our nation. Who will you trust to represent you? Do you trust Pierre Poilievre? Such benefits as dental care, pharma care, maintain the national school food program, and respect diversity in our community? Can you trust Pierre Poilievre to protect our environment? The Liberal government's Canada Strong plan includes health care improvements, tariff and infrastructure related job creation, tax relief, and no compromise on the environment to build infrastructure. The Mark Carney government will protect and respect the agri-food businesses and its supply-managed sectors, including dairy, poultry, and eggs, from tariff negotiations, not on the table. This is so important for our region. We will make permanent the doubling of revenue protection for farmers under the Agri-Stability Program from $3 million to $6 million per farm in case of significant revenue drops caused by the Trump tariffs, extreme weather events, and other external shocks. I'm here with you tonight on behalf of Team Carney. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. That concludes the first section of the debate, opening statements. Our next section is a Q&A of 10 questions, again, randomly selected. We're going to start out with a bit of a fiery one, I guess, which is on the minds of all Canadians. Here we go. Do you believe the U.S.-Canada relationship is worth salvaging? If so, how will your party rebuild the relationship? If not, what do you see as the alternate path? Erica, you have the honors. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you so much. More than ever right now, we need to reevaluate that relationship. Our economies were built on a very intertwined trade agreement that allowed us to ship our raw materials over there. They would process this for them and send us back. Is our relationship salvageable? Probably. Just like any other tyrannous we've had in the past. You need to just kind of ride out the wave, hopefully, and from there we'll be able to renegotiate what our relationship looks like at the end of that term. What it could look like, though, is us being able to take our raw resources and manufacture them at every level. That'll allow us to add value through that processing and gain international trading partners that we might not have had access to before just by processing raw resources within our country. We had a safety agreement with them. We had an economic powerhouse with them. I believe that is something that we can't let go of. We depend on the U.S. for a lot of our products that we ship in, and we have family there, And we have snowbirds who love to go for 6 months a year. This isn't something that's going to go away. But the problem that I see right now the most is that we're facing climate emergency. Climate emergency isn't going to just be isolated within Canada, though. This is going to be all across North America. And we're going to need teamwork across borders to resolve this issue as they come. Sending our troops, sending whatever kind of emergency services that we already do to the states to support them is something that we're going to need in return from them. Something different, though, when we approach this relationship, and I really want to emphasize within Canada, is our treatment of women. We need to make sure that our women have the tools necessary to succeed. That's something that you're seeing fall apart in the states, and we don't want that. If we want a strong economy and we want to be stable within Canada, we need to support women by having daycare, transit, and affordable housing so that we can provide a safety net that's going to allow us to be stable.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, you have 1 minute to respond.
Thank you. And yeah, we need to come to the table and renegotiate this relationship we have. You know, 75% of all exports go to the U.S. We do $1 trillion of trade between the two countries. We just had, on the one end, a president who has taken advantage of Canada, and we had, more importantly, a prime minister who didn't stand up for Canada and its industries. And that's the main part. What that means is become more competitive. I mean, use different dance partners. If the Americans aren't going to trade with us, we're going to trade with Southeast Asia. We're going to make sure we get our pipelines and natural resources out of the ground so we become stronger. The world wants what Canada has, whether that be agriculture, oil, gas, our aluminum, our potash. They want everything we have. We have to be more competitive, which means no more carbon taxes on industry, which Mark Carney wants to do. That means getting our pipelines finished, which Mark Carney doesn't want to do. At the end of the day, it's standing up for agriculture, our farmers, with no more carbon taxes at all. This is going to be more competitive. We're the only ones going to do that. We're going to stand up for all of us.
Okay, sorry, just a quick reminder. No heckling, no booing. That's not what we're here for tonight. We're here to listen. We're here to decide who the best candidate is for our vote, who deserves our vote. So let's please don't be disruptive. Thank you. Kate, over to you. You have 1 minute.
Hi. So the U.S. has been our biggest trading partner since we first signed the Free Trade Agreement in 1988. Logistically, it makes sense with our shared border, also our shared values, common interests, and strong personal connections and powerful multi-layered economic ties. What is clear to all of us Canadians right now is that thanks to Donald Trump, we cannot rely on the U.S. as a trading partner the way we have in the past. I am painfully aware of this, as Trump's volatility is affecting my own bottom line and that of the trades I work with every day in this community. We're not going to count out U.S. as a trading partner and ignore the relationships we spent years developing, but the priority right now is developing alternatives to trading with the U.S. that we can rely on consistently. The NDP has been a strong voice in bringing together all levels of government, businesses, and unions to develop a national strategy that will boost critical domestic manufacturing and processing of Canada's natural resources. We are ready to step in and preserve good jobs.
Thank you. Chris, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. Well, let's be realistic. We are inextricably tied to the U.S. markets. As Ryan pointed out, we have a $1 trillion trade arrangement with that company, our country. But we need to ensure that there are safeguards to the Canadian economy and not be treated as the 51st state. What started as a joke, seemingly by Mr. Trump, has now turned into a serious threat. Mark Carney has told Donald Trump, despite the fact that the president has alluded to this joke repeatedly, that it's not on the table. I trust Mark Carney to work very hard at negotiating with the U.S., but he's also looking for new and friendlier markets around the world, so we'll not be in this predicament in the future. There's a lot of uncertainty, and we were currently developing partnerships with other nations, but we are also strengthening the ties between provinces so that we can get Prince Edward County wine sold in British Columbia.
Erica, you have 1 minute to close out this question.
I think what I really would like to emphasize in my rebuttal here is the fact that we need unity within us if we're going to survive this. There is a relationship that is going to be inevitable with the states because we're this close to them. Right? If we want to take advantage of that, though, we need to have a strong economy that's stable and sustainable, that's working on a green future. That way, we're able to overcome these kind of issues together and work towards a future that we can all rely on. Thanks.
Thank you. Moving on to our second question. This question was submitted by the Prince Edward Federation of Agriculture, as well as the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. The question is, if elected, how will you ensure work will continue to reduce interprovincial trade barriers so that agriculture can serve and grow potential markets right here in Canada? Ryan, you have 2 minutes to start this question.
Thank you, sir. The biggest problem with our trade when we looked at worldwide is we can't even trade with ourselves. We have these borders between each province, and we have an agreement that oversees that. But the Canadian trade, Free Trade Agreement is about this thick, and the exemptions are about this thick. We stop ourselves from trading with ourselves, whether that be wine or liquor, whether that be labor, which are the two biggest proponents. And our government is going to ensure, as soon as we get elected, and I think we've heard this from all governments, we're going to sit down with the first ministers, with the premiers, and make sure we get rid of all exceptions. There should be no exceptions in a Canadian free trade agreement. That's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to standardize regulations on food safety, transportation, and packaging. We're going to create an interprovincial trade council to resolve disputes and enforce reforms. But the bigger thing about it is two parts. When it comes to labor, it's really our doctors and it's our nurses right now. We have the Military Family Resource Center in Quinte West. And right now, if you're a service member coming from Nova Scotia or coming from Newfoundland and your spouse is a paramedic, a teacher, or a doctor, or a nurse, it takes you sometimes a year and a half to 3 years to get accredited. So the first thing we're going to do is model what Alberta did, which was two pieces of legislation, one to work with the unions and sector labor mobility. Within 30 days, each of those provinces will have to have a test done and then either deny or approve those accreditations, meaning we're going to have more teachers, more doctors, more nurses, more professionals that come to our region from other provinces, which is very important. We have a Blue Seal program, and that's going to be making sure we also have internationally trained doctors, all of which 10,000 in Canada. We're going to give them also a test within 60 days. If they meet that test, and the same with nurses, we're going to get doctors in our hospitals and people that are waiting for doctors. We're going to make sure through interprovincial trade we eliminate those barriers so Canadians can work in any province they want.
Kate, you have 1 minute to respond.
So I guess if we look at the silver lining of our Trump era, it's clear that every party is aligned in the need for making cross-border trading easier and straightforward. If elected, I will advocate for a coordinated federal approach that brings provinces and territories to the table to streamline regulations and remove unnecessary trade barriers, especially those that make it harder for farmers to sell food and products across provincial lines. This means harmonizing standards where it makes sense, investing in interprovincial transportation and distribution of infrastructure, and ensuring that local producers aren't buried under red tape when trying to reach new Canadian markets. By reducing trade barriers, but reducing trade barriers shouldn't come at a cost. The NDP is committed to making sure that workers are taken care of as well.
Thank you, Kate. Chris, the floor is yours. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. Job one for Mark Carney has been working with the premiers to remove interprovincial trade barriers, both for products and labor. He said he wanted the barriers removed by July 1st, 2025, and we're well on the way to that. We have seen Ontario Premier Doug Ford, of all people, wholeheartedly sign on. We have other premiers as well. So interprovincial trade barriers are coming down, and they will be down under a Mark Carney government by Canada Day. As well, Liberals are implementing a suite of policy measures to defend farmers and ranchers across Canada, investing in businesses and workers and cutting red tape. We will build more domestic processing capacity, including food processing, capacity in rural remote areas with a new $200 million domestic food processing fund. We're going to grow the agri-food business across Canada with fewer barriers between provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, you have 1 minute.
First thing that we need to do, and there we go, is invest. We need to invest in Canada. We need to invest in an east-west Canadian trade infrastructure. We need to improve our rail lines. We need better roads. We need better energy transmission between provinces through a national power grid. That's the first step. Second to that, we need to bring all the provinces to the table. There are issues that are requiring conversations to reduce the limitations on interprovincial trade. These include licensing requirements for doctors, for engineers, for hygienists to cross borders. We need to reduce the standardization of products so that we can sell over province borders and eliminate those restrictions of sales. Additionally, we need to reduce regulatory costs, things that are burdening our businesses right now that'll help get their products on the market faster while increasing our capacity to trade overseas.
Thank you, Erica. Brian, you have the final minute to close out this question.
So when we talk about what we need from the government, we need to reduce red tape and bureaucracy. You're going to hear that a lot from our government. It's also taxes. Taxes have been going up so high. And when we talk about interprovincial trade, what we want to trade more of, which is spirits, beer, and wine from Prince Edward County, because it's the best. One of the things that have gone up in the last several years is the escalator tax. We're going to eliminate all of those increases and go back to 2017 levels. That's the first thing we need to do. We're also going to make sure the rules and regulations that made some of these wineries produce secondary buildings for this is going to be gone as well. The bottom line is we want to make sure it's so easy for Prince Edward County businesses to produce and sell their wares not only to this local region but across Canada and then across the world, that we produce more jobs, we keep people here in Prince Edward County, and we sell Prince Edward County to the world.
Thank you all. Moving on to question three, this question also comes from the Prince Edward Federation of Agriculture as well as the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. The new Parrish and Heinbecker grain terminal is a critical piece of supply chain infrastructure for regional grain farmers who hold many benefits for farmers and the environment. The new marine agricultural terminal will reduce transportation costs, lower greenhouse gas emissions, remove trucks from Highway 401, and improve access to export markets. The question is, do you support the grain terminal? If so, how will your government show support? If you do not support the new grain terminal, please explain why. Kate, you have the floor. You have two questions to open up this, or two minutes to open up this question. Thank you.
Hot topic of the area. So the Parrish and Heinbecker grain terminal clearly brings benefits to our regional grain farmers. It reduces transportation costs, it opens up access to export markets, and it lowers greenhouse gas emissions by shifting freight off our highways and onto the water. It's the kind of infrastructure that we can support both the economy and the environment, and we need more of that in rural Canada. But at the same time, I want to be clear, support for agriculture doesn't mean ignoring the concerns of the community. I've heard from residents who are worried about increased industrial traffic in residential areas, noise, dust, and the long-term environmental impacts on the Bay of Quinte. And those concerns are real and valid. There's also a real need to ensure that this development benefits local farmers and workers, not just large corporate interests. An NDP government would work to strengthen the oversight and accountability of a project like this, making sure there are strong environmental protections, local hiring and procurement policies, and regular community consultation to keep people informed and involved. Infrastructure should serve the community, not disrupt it.
Thank you, Kate. Chris, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. In a word, yes, we do support the expansion of access to larger markets, both in Canada and around the world, and this will help Prince Edward County and Quinte Region grain farmers greatly access markets in the rest of the world. It appears the grain terminal may be an avenue to assist in that expansion for all of southeastern Ontario farmers. It's important that any of these expansions, though, are also done in an environmentally friendly way and with full compliance of provincial and federal legislations. We're also cognizant of the fact that any of this operation of the PNH terminal is also within a short distance of the drinking water intake in Picton Harbour for Picton proper. We are very concerned about any impacts, be they sediments or dust in that regard, and we will be closely monitoring that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, over to you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you so much. It's pretty obvious that all the issues have been brought up by our previous two candidates on regarding this. What I support is what the community supports. And if we have this kind of support for an initiative to help our farmers, then that's what we're going to do. But if maintaining our environment is a priority for the people in this area, then that's what we're going to do. It's important to listen to our community. We have great opportunities that are going to come up, but they're not necessarily the best thing for us. What I like about this project, 38,000 tons of grain moved through our port, amazing. No rezoning required because they're not going to be using shipping containers, awesome. If we're going to do it, we have to do it collaboratively. We need to make sure that everybody involved and everybody's supporting it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah. Ryan, you have 1 minute to respond.
Yes, so I support the grain terminal with the condition that the Picton terminal acts to be a good neighbor following environmental and zoning rules and maintaining community engagement, and as long as Highway 49 is fixed at the same time. Really important. I think we all heard from neighbors, we've heard from the community on the port and the terminal itself, and let's be honest, it's going to be good for farmers, and whatever's good for farmers is good for the county. We know, though, that Highway 49 is a crucial part of that, and if we can't get it fixed, if that's not part of funding in order to get that done, it just can't be done. There's no way we can even get cars or trucks down there to start. But we have to follow environmental rules, make sure there's community engagement. I can't stress that enough from people that I've heard across the region. They want to hear from the terminals. They want to hear the plans. I think it's both incumbent to the federal government, probably the provincial government, but also the municipality, that we continue to engage with the community on the plans, the benefits, and ensuring that everyone's following the same rules and that we get that done. Thank you.
Kate, you have the final minute to close out this question.
So I had a client who bought a beautiful Victoria near the cement factory, and she restored it, and it was a labor of love. That house was gorgeous. But every day she was dealing with the environmental impacts of the cement plant, and she ended up having to sell her house to the cement company because she just couldn't take it anymore. When I asked her why she didn't have any recourse or couldn't have them stop, she said she could not find a governing body that would pay attention to her case because it's so loosely governed along our shoreline. So if this comes to fruition, it will be paramount that a governing body will be there to make sure that our residents are taken care of and that the environmental impacts aren't more than our community can bear.
Thank you all. Our fourth question of the evening was submitted by the Prince Edward County Arts Council. The question is, Prince Edward County is on par with Stratford and Niagara-on-the-Lake as having the highest concentration of professional artists in Ontario, the seventh highest in all of Canada, with one in every 15 workers in the county in a cultural occupation. This represents 6.6% of all the local labor force. The question is, will you and your party support the Canadian Arts Coalition's recommendation to allocate 1% of federal spending to arts, culture, and heritage? If yes, how will you support or even enhance the recommendation? If not, how will you and your party support arts and culture nationally and in the Bay of Quinte? Chris, you have the floor and the first 2 minutes to open this question.
Thank you. A Mark Carney government will advocate for increases to spending for arts, culture, and heritage. I realize the importance of the arts community, the economy, and livelihoods in Prince Edward County and throughout the Bayaquini region. We also see that the arts, culture, and heritage community draws tourism and its financial benefits to Prince Edward County. Part of a broader spending pillar, the Mark Carney government will spend $20 billion over 4 years to unite Canada by increased funding to agencies such as the Canada Council for the Arts, Telefilm Canada, the Canada Media Fund, and the National Film Board, recognizing the economic importance of Canada's creative industries and creators. That means creators right here in Prince Edward County. The more of our perspectives that are brought to life, the better we understand Canada, and the more we can show the world what makes Canada strong. One of the premier pillars of our government is investing in culture is to enshrine and protect CBC and Radio Canada. Including, but not exclusive of, an initial $150 million boost to develop a new strategic vision and way forward, while at the same time ensuring the business model of the CBC is brought to heel so that we don't see wasteful funding or spending and with more careful accounting. Thank you.
Yeah! Eric, you have the first opportunity to respond. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. The best way to fight fascism is through art and love, and joy, and color. So absolutely, absolutely. We want to create stable, multi-base funding for museums, for artists, for rural communities, so they can have festivals and events that display our diverse culture and heritage and community. We need federal funding for Indigenous artists so that they can travel. And so that they can provide mentorship. We want to match the CBC's funding with our international partners. And we need a guaranteed livable income. This is what's going to help our artists. It's going to help our small businesses. It's going to stabilize our economy so that we can transition through this frightful period. But I love you guys and love each other and make sure that you're painting and drawing and going out in the streets and singing and dancing and making sure everybody feels that way.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, the stage is yours. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. And I've been around a long time with tourism, and I was around back in the day when Dan Taylor was here talking about the creative economy and how important it was to Prince Edward County. So important that 1 in 15 workers now in the county are part of that. That was when the Taste Trail was just being developed. And now, look what Prince Edward County and has become. Look where we are right now with the Regent Theatre. I commit to always fight hard for arts funding for Prince Edward County, for our artists and our creative economies. I commit to making sure, no matter what happens in government, that I'm there for our artists, for Prince Edward County, and to make sure that everyone can get ahead and can get the funding they need. I'll also push for grant reform and faster approvals to help small and mid-sized organizations thrive. And we're going to make sure we have the continued natural cultural appreciation that this county is known for and that I'm so proud to represent when I've been in Ottawa. And so I'll continue to do that. Thank you.
Kate, over to you. You have 1 minute.
So as an interior designer and a floral installation artist by trade, this is top of mind. Artists and creatives are my friends, colleagues, mentors, and community. They're the people at my kitchen table and on job sites with me. I am committed to being a strong voice for the arts community in Ottawa and for ensuring that Bayaquini is not just part of the conversation, but leading it. I firmly support the Canadian Arts Coalition recommendation to allow 1% of federal spending to arts, culture, and heritage. The federal MPP has long believed that artists are essential, not a luxury. If elected, I will advocate for increasing support to institutions like the Canada Council for Arts and Heritage, which play a vital role in funding local initiatives. My time is ticking and I have so much to say on this topic because I'm with Erica. Artists are our future. They are so important to our community. They are the reason why I chose Picton to raise my four kids.
Thank you, Kate. First, you now have 1 minute to close out this question.
Thank you. And circling back to the fact that, and this was brought up, we all received a questionnaire as well from the Prince Edward Arts community. We understand that while some of the Prince Edward artists are this is their main livelihood, some of them need secondary jobs to support them. Let's face it, the old line about a starving artist is not so funny when you are literally trying to subsidize your income. Carney government in that vein will temporarily waive 1 week employment EI waiting period for anyone affected by the tariffs or any turn down in the economy. We're suspending the rules around separation for a 6 month period so workers don't have to exhaust severance pay before collecting EI. These are some of the supports that we will give to workers because let's face it, if the economy is affected by the tariffs and the effects of the Trump government on our economy, we're going to need support for you.
Thank you all. Question five for tonight is submitted from the audience in advance. Communities from across the country, especially small rural municipalities like Prince Edward County, are struggling to keep up with rising costs and needs like infrastructure and services. Respecting that municipal affairs are within provincial jurisdiction, how will your party work with local governments and the provinces to ensure that small communities like the county can thrive? Erica, you're first. You have 2 minutes.
Right now, we need leadership more than anything. We need a solution to the problems that we're having because that's what this is. This is a problem, and it's been a problem for so long. We need to work intergovernmentally. We need all three levels at the table. What does that look like to me? Well, that looks like communities like Prince Edward County and Belleville making bids to our provinces to say, this is what we need right now. This is the type of housing that's going to support us. This is the type of housing that's going to resolve the issues that we're experiencing right now, because we have diverse issues across the country. Different alternative housing options are going to solve our issues for us. So from there, our communities make bids to our provinces. The provinces then create an infrastructure plan. How do we resolve this issue with that? There, federal funding comes in. If we're not going to work with all three levels of government together, this isn't going to work. And this is what the problem we've been experiencing up until this point. Communities are crying out and saying, please help us build diverse housing to support us. We need to get our people off the streets. We need affordable housing so that people who live in the area can actually afford to live here. We want to keep putting up businesses, but the people who live in the region can't afford to work at those businesses. It's not going to happen. If we're going to put up public housing, it needs to be at least 30% of your income in order to be affordable. So when the Green Party puts up public funded housing, it's going to stay affordable by using covenants to maintain that 30% threshold. Closing loopholes so that corporations can't be buying up our single family homes, and eliminating unfair tax advantages for real estate investment trusts to make sure that when Canadians get in, that they can stay there and that we can keep growing our economy with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Right. Ryan, you have 1 minute for your response.
Thank you. This goes to my opening statement. Well, well-balanced demographics mean a well-balanced economy. So how do we keep our youth here? How do we draw more youth? You know, one stat that's really damning as well is that we lose 80% of our youth to big cities. So they leave. So how do we keep them here? Well, number one, it's got to be housing. So we need to approve Pinecrest right away. And then we need to do four more Pinecrests. We have to get housing going right away. Number two, we have to make sure, and this federal government was responsible for canceling programs at Loyalists. We need Loyalist College because it's training the future, and it's training our future workforce, not only for those that live here, but making sure that we keep those staying here. Third, we have to fix our problems with it comes to cell service and infrastructure. You know, we had new cell phone towers out in Prince Edward County, yet the service is worse when you go across Canada or go across the county. And something we have to make sure we bring more competition in, and you should be paying less than $25 for a cell phone plan. That's what we're going to do when we bring competition in. So a lot of big help for the county, making sure that rural is important. We get roads fixed, we get our services we need, and we get it all.
Kate, over to you.
Okay, so here in the Bay of Quinte, we have an obvious problem. People losing manufacturing jobs because tariffs are impacting the industry. Contractors I work with every day are experiencing a slowdown like they've never seen before. And we have municipalities who desperately need to repair and build infrastructure. We have a housing crisis that municipalities can't build because their infrastructure can't support more houses. Any local tourist knows that, or locals know that once tourist season hits, our cell phone signal takes a massive nosedive. And we have Highway 49, the busiest route to our popular tourist destinations, crumbling under our tires. The NDP is prepared to invest in shovel-ready infrastructure immediately, like Highway 49. We're going to support rural and small-town infrastructure, like upgrading local roads, water systems, and broadband access, to make sure no part of our region is left behind. We are dedicated to partnering with Indigenous communities like the Mohawks of the Bay of Quinte, respecting their leadership and ensuring infrastructure dollars are supporting the conservation.
Chris, you have 1 minute for your response.
Thank you. The new fully costed and comprehensive Mark Carney platform lays out our commitment to tariff-related and internal-related infrastructure. It also deals with housing and cost issues. A Mark Carney-led Liberal government will double the pace of construction to almost 500,000 new homes a year, with a housing plan that will create Build Canada homes to get the federal government back into the business of building housing, make the housing market work better by catalyzing private capital, cutting red tape, and lowering the cost of home building. We will eliminate the goods and service tax for first-time homebuyers on homes under $1 million, saving families up to $50,000. Finally, we will build new trade infrastructure that connects Canada through the new $5 billion Trade Diversification Corridors Fund that will include ports, railways, airports, highway, and other trade-enabling infrastructure, including Highway 49.
Erica, you have the final minute to close this question.
This is how out of touch our government is. We're talking about rising costs of life, and we're bringing up cell phones. If you're concerned about the cost of living, why did you vote against cost of living relief measures that were put up in place? And I'm sorry, but if you're going to talk about our youth in the area and how important they are to you, and I brought up the National School Food Program and asked you, why did you vote against that? And you said bureaucracy, so I'm going to go that and tell the children, I'm sorry, kids, you don't get lunch today because MP Williams said bureaucracy got in the way of providing food.
Thank you all. Question six. I don't need to raise yours. Okay, so I'm sorry. Yeah, again, just a not so friendly reminder this time about heckling. Not so friendly reminder. Thank you very much. Okay, submitted by local manufacturers is question number six for the evening. The county has world-class manufacturers like wineries, cideries, breweries, distilleries, meaderies. Canadians are all in and elbows up on buying Canadian. We are so proud of our fellow compatriots. However, provincial and federal taxes make Canadian products more expensive than similar importer products. For example, and I'm sorry, I know a little bit about this one. So when you go in and buy your favorite $34 bottle of spirits, it is heavily taxed. It is so heavily taxed that the manufacturer only receives between $11 and $12 on that $34 sale. The rest goes into HST, levy upon levy upon levy, provincial tax and federal tax. So the question is, if elected, what is your plan to help all Canadian manufacturers, not just beverage alcohol producers, to not only compete with imported products, but to give Canadian manufacturers an advantage when selling in their own country? Ryan, you have the floor. You have 2 minutes for your statement.
Thank you, sir. And the first thing we're going to do is get rid of the carbon tax. The Marconi wants to put out all industrial manufacturing. I couldn't even have gotten to speak around this. And the number of jobs it was going to affect was 6,000 direct jobs. 6,000 direct jobs will be impacted if we have a carbon tax go from consumer to industry. And that's actually a 34,000 person job effect on that because of the multiplier. But the second thing we're going to do is make sure that all businesses can be competitive. I do want to jump back to what we're going to do for Prince Edward County spirit, beer, and wine producers. We're going to eliminate the federal alcohol escalator tax and freeze excess tax at 2017 levels. We're going to review all excess taxes with the goal of reducing burdens on small producers. We're going to simplify CRA reporting for small manufacturers and eliminate double taxation. We're going to launch Buy Canadian federal marketing programs for local goods. We're going to provide innovative grants to boost productivity efficiency, and we're going to offer export development funding for small-scale manufacturing looking to go global. In other words, we're going to make sure we make our businesses relentlessly competitive with lower taxes so they can compete not only in Canada, but on the world stage.
Kate, you have the floor. You have 1 minute to respond.
Canadian producers are putting premium and highly sought-after products into the marketplace, but far too often they're being held back by outdated tax structures and policies that favor imports and big corporate players. I believe it's time we gave Canadian manufacturers, especially small and mid-sized producers, a fair shot in their own market. First, we need a full review of federal taxes and regulatory burdens, particularly for craft beverage alcohol producers. A system that sees $34 bottles netting only $11.50 for the makers is broken. It is punishing local businesses that create jobs, source local ingredients, and reinvest in our communities. Second, we'll push for a Buy Canadian procurement strategy so government contracts prioritize locally made products, not imports. And we'll offer targeted tax credits and financing for Canadian manufacturers who are innovating, growing, and creating good paying jobs here at home. Finally, we'll fight for fair trade practices, better inclusive cooperation, and investment.
Thank you. Chris, over to you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. A Mark Carney government will build a stronger Canada by creating one Canadian economy, not 13. This is an economy where businesses such as winery and spirits producers can sell their products where they please and where anyone can work where they desire. We have in our plan for agriculture and agri-food, as well as wine growers, increase support for those producers to access new markets for their products with an additional $30 million in the agri-marketing program. As well, we will increase growers to buy new, more efficient equipment for those facilities with a $30 million top-up to the Agriculture Clean Technology Program. These are all good news stories for Canadian wine producers. As well, we will double the loan guarantee limit from $500,000 to $1 million of the Canadian Agricultural Loans Act program and expand terms from 5 to 10 years.
Thank you, Chris. Erica, over to you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. We need to increase tax incentives for small and medium businesses across the country. We need to create more opportunity for them within the market by reducing their upfront costs. But also, we need to create grants for innovation. We need to adapt our technology that we have to make it more cost-effective for businesses, and we need to be able to fund business to look for those opportunities. We need to leverage public procurement to prioritize Canadian small business, medium business, and we need to enhance the access of our businesses onto the global market and give them an opportunity that they might not have had before. We need to grow our economy foundationally, and it starts with businesses like in the county. Thanks.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, you have the final minute to close this question.
You know, it's interesting in the county because our small manufacturers, our small businesses are our artisans, right? Our wineries, our spirit producers, our breweries. You know, we have to really look at the people that are providing the jobs here in the county and what we can do for them. And all of them are saying the same thing. Number one is housing. We need housing so that when we attract workers to this region, they have a place to live. That's the number one complaint we always heard from tourism. So that's got to be fixed. And that means approving projects like Pinecrest right away and doing more of them. Second is to ensure that we can lessen the burden for them. And that's lowering the taxes as a whole. And I think, you know, one of the biggest concerns always is municipally how they're getting enough taxes in. But I can tell you, if we get more businesses here and we treat them right, and especially for Canada, you're going to have more businesses in the county. And guess what? That's going to pay more taxes to the municipality, which means that's going to pay for your roads. We're going to make sure that we get things paved. We're going to make sure that you're looked after in the county if we're doing it the right way. Thank you.
Thank you all. Question 7 for the evening, submitted by the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. Question is, what specific federal funding mechanisms would you propose to help Bay of Quinte municipalities finance the infrastructure necessary for affordable housing development? Kate, over to you. You have 2 minutes.
Thanks. Yep. Housing is a crisis here in Bay of Quinte. Municipalities like Belleville, Quinte West, and Prince Edward County are being pushed to the limit trying to build infrastructure for affordable and supportive housing without the financial tools they need to do it. As your NDP candidate, I am committed to changing that. We would create a permanent federal funding stream specifically for municipalities to build the infrastructure like roads, water, wastewater, and transit that's needed to unlock affordable housing developments. Right now, too many shovel-ready projects are stuck because local governments simply can't afford the upfront costs. That has to change. We'll also restore federal leadership in affordable housing with a publicly funded, not-for-profit housing strategy, meaning direct investment in community housing, co-ops, and mixed-income developments with stable operating funding for the long term. And we'd reform the Canada Infrastructure Bank so it actually serves the public good, helping communities access low-interest financing for housing-related infrastructure instead of focusing on private profits. We'll work in partnership with municipalities, not just hand them a one-time check, but give them a predictable, sustained funding that they can count on to plan and build for our future. Affordable housing isn't a luxury, it's a right. And we need the federal government to finally treat it that way. Thank you.
Chris, over to you. You have 1 minute to respond.
We need to work in partnership with our provinces, territories, and Indigenous peoples to decide on major projects in the national interest. Our government will not impose any project on any government or Indigenous community. We'll work with premiers to remove barriers and encourage collaboration to better manage our resources of projects. A Liberal government under Mark Carney will cut red tape to speed up energy project approvals with our one window, one approval process. We have an economic plan that places the environment and Indigenous rights at the forefront, and Pierre Poilievre and his Conservatives do not have anything in that policy in their plan. This plan will get major projects built in the energy and resource sectors, attract more investments to Canada, and create more jobs for Canadians. The Carney government is looking at extending the Housing Accelerator Fund, something the federal Conservatives under Pierre Poilievre have adamantly opposed and vowed to scrap. There are many plans in Mark Carney's platform to deal with housing.
Erica, you have the stage and 1 minute to respond.
Thank you. Our first step would be to declare housing a national emergency, like it is. For From there, we need to eliminate GST on non-market housing construction material. But specifically for this region, the Greens plan includes increasing municipal funding for emergency housing and transitional shelters to get people off our streets and into a warm bed. Additionally, we are included, thank you, a rural housing strategy, ensuring that federal funding not only supports housing, but it supports availability. We have the biggest national housing project in 50 years, and that includes 1.2 million permanently affordable housing projects all across the country. And like I said before, we need all levels of our government working together to get this done as fast as possible. If it takes 7 years, we're already 7 years behind.
Ryan, it's over to you. 1 minute to respond.
Well, I agree. We have to get housing done as fast as possible. And that means getting rid of red tape and ensuring that government actually gets out of the way, because government is having a terrible time building housing. How can we believe that we're going to have 500,000 homes built in Canada when this government can't even approve 55 rest-ready units in Pinecrest School? How do we believe that this government can get anything done when it gets more rules and regulations in the way? Let me tell you something that's very simple about what Pinecrest has been going through. They spent, over the last 8 years, $200,000 just on consultants, just to meet the rules that the government put in place from CMHC. It's shameful when you think of the $1 million that were raised locally. These are your dollars that went into this project to get housing done, and CMHC, the government, made them spend $200,000 on consultants. We have to get government out of the way. That's the real answer. We're going to accelerate approvals, reduce bureaucracy for non-projects. We're going to make sure when Andy Spry gets a project going and he's done one, he's going to get a Nexus card so we can do another and another and another until we get housing built in this region.
Okay, you have the final minute to close this question.
Yeah, so right now we have a freeze on building in the county because we simply don't have the infrastructure to support the new homes that are meant to be built. We also have contractors who are literally sitting on their hands because work is slow, because we're all feeling the effects of the tariffs, and private citizens are afraid to spend money right now, which is perfectly reasonable. We saw that the way our community showed up at town council in support of the Queen Elizabeth Project, that we desperately need housing in this community. And we have a community rallying here to make that happen. We just don't have the infrastructure to see it done. How can we have a vibrant arts community if we can't house our artists? How can we have a booming local industry if we can't house our service workers? This is such a priority for our government and everybody here at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Question number 8, submitted by the Prince Edward County Chamber of Commerce. What initiatives will you support to assist small and medium-sized businesses, keeping in mind 95% of all businesses in the county are small businesses? How will you assist small and medium-sized businesses in accessing capital for growth and development? Chris, you have the opportunity to start this question. Your response, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Mark Carney government will make it easier for Canadians to buy Canadian products. Mark Carney's plan is to improve the economy and make it more resilient, cost-efficient with tax breaks. As well, we will defer corporate and business income tax payments and GST and HST remittances from April 2nd to June 30th, 2025, providing up to $40 billion in liquidity across the country. We will deploy a new financing facility for businesses, as well as providing more funding to Canada's regional development agencies. There is no question that small businesses are the backbone of this economy. My wife, for instance, operates a small business in Wellington. We see the challenges every day of increased utility costs for Prince Edward County Water, for instance, which is crazy sky high, I don't have to tell anybody in this room. Rising product costs, labor costs, all of those above. A Mark Carney government is putting in supports for small businesses and working with Ontario as well as other provinces to build those supports into our business plans. And Yeah, we're all in on small business, and that's it.
Erica, you have the first opportunity to respond. You have 1 minute.
A great way to invest in our small businesses and medium businesses is to provide opportunities for female entrepreneurs. Female entrepreneurs grow our army. We know that the more support that we give our women, the better our industry is. Access to capital, including innovation grants, technology grants, but also reducing the upfront costs for people who want to open their small and medium businesses. Things like having access to daycare, having access to great transit. Also, keeping our more money in our pockets by increasing the basic personal tax income to $40,000, meaning that you can keep up to $3,600 back in your pocket so you can invest in your own business and not just giving it to the government. Thank you.
Ryan, over to you. You have 1 minute.
So one of the best policies I think I've heard this election, and it did come from Pierre Poilievre, was to allow capital gains deferral when entrepreneurs reinvest in Canadian businesses. And we went from a government that wanted to tax capital gains, and that really affected a lot of Canadian businesses, especially in this region, to a point where if you would reinvest in Canadian businesses, into Canada, into Prince Edward County, you'll have a full deferral on capital gains. And I'll tell you what that'll do for local businesses. It helps them save a lot of taxes. It helps them grow. It helps them expand, which is really important. But a second piece that I really liked is something that I was championing in the House of Commons, which is open banking. And open banking is as simple as the banks, the big banks right now, own your data. And open banking, the simplest part of the legislation was that you own that data. And on your consent, you could then shop around as a local business, as a consumer, to any different bank or what we call fintech as you want, which means you saved money. In the UK, when this was implemented, it saved those businesses in the UK up to 5,000 a year. And that's what we're going to look at implementing to help businesses across the country.
Kate, over to you. You have 1 minute to respond.
The small and medium-sized businesses are the backbone of the Bay of Quinte economy. And I know that because I own one of them. And I work with other small businesses every day. Right now, too many of them are being held back, not because they don't have good ideas or hardworking teams, but because they can't access the capital they need to grow. As your NDP candidate, I'll fight for a fair system that works for local entrepreneurs, not just big banks and multinational corporations. First, we'll expand access to low-interest loans and grants to the federal programs like the Canada Small Business Financing Program, that focus on cutting red tape and ensuring that truly small businesses, especially in rural and semi-urban areas like ours, can actually qualify and compete. Second, we'll boost funding for community-based lending organizations and credit unions, including Community Futures Development Corporations, which are already doing great work here in the Bay of Quinte. Third, we'll target supports for equity-seeking entrepreneurs, including women, newcomers, and Indigenous business owners.
Chris, you have the final minute to close this topic.
Thank you. For decades, the U.S. has been our trading partner, but their unjustified tariffs have ruptured that relationship, and nobody's feeling that any more succinctly than small businesses. The rest of the world wants us and needs what Canada has to offer. I suggest that our small businesses have an opportunity to step up in that trade gap, and they can do this business when supported. This trade is essential to our prosperity, and in order to build the fastest growing economy in the G7, we need to double down on our advantages and strengthen our relationships with reliable partners, taking into full account the supports that we will put in place to support small businesses. We need to diversify our supply chain so that we have a more resilient, prosperous economy, and that is a support for small businesses, however you look at it. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Question 9 for the evening was submitted by the audience. And the question is, in January, The province provided almost $20 million of the required $52.3 million to support the rehabilitation of County Road 49. Will you and your party, if elected, commit to providing the unfunded portion of $24.5 million? This question, because it's outside of the top eight, we have to randomly select who's going to go first. Ryan, you've been selected first, which means, Kate, you will follow.
We have to get 49 done. There's no question. When you look at where we've been trying to get the funding from, the federal government doesn't fund roads. It's been a big problem. We've looked at every single stream of funding. We've looked at trying to connect it. I was in front of county council, and I was talking at that time about linking it to the green infrastructure and the battery operations that are happening in Bath and other places. When we looked at tying it to the infrastructure, which is the port itself, in Heidenberg, that's where we saw a pathway. Of course, those funds were all used up. And so when we, if I was able to get elected again, I'm not going to stop with this. I've already talked to relevant parties and individuals. I've had almost every MP from Ontario down. I commit right now to get that road funded, to make sure we get it paved and get it done for Prince Edward County. Thank you.
Thank you. Kate, you're next.
Thanks. So I drive County Road 49 regularly, and it's gotten so bad. It's not just inconvenient, it's unsafe. And it's been like that for far too long. I hear hockey parents from out of town complaining about away games in Pictons because of this highway. I see locals posting pictures on social media of the damage their cars have sustained on 49, along with repair bills, a flat tire, vent rim suspension and alignment issues, and cracked windshield from flying debris aren't unusual. It's clear that County Road 49 isn't just in bad shape, it's become a symbol of neglected rural infrastructure. So yes, if elected, I would absolutely fight to secure the remaining $24.5 million needed to fully rehabilitate County Road 49. And I won't just fight for it, I'll make sure the federal government understands what this road means to the people who live here, work here, and visit here. The Bay of Quinte needs reliable infrastructure, not just for safety, but for tourism, trade, and economic development, especially in a place like Prince Edward County.
Thank you. Chris, over to you. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. And as I stated before, we need to work in partnership with the provinces, territories, and Indigenous peoples on major projects, not the least of which Highway 49. I don't think you're going to find anybody at this table who's going to say they won't work to get 49 funded from the federal government. It is a priority. We have to remember that this is a downloading issue that has happened to municipalities and territories across Ontario, thanks to the Mike Harris government of the common sense revolution. But apportioning blame doesn't help get the problem solved. We will, I think, to a man and woman, every one of us, when we get to Ottawa, will fight for this through any means of funding we can. It's not only become a crucial issue, it's a safety issue. It needs to be done.
Here, here.
Erica, over to you. You have 1 minute.
As I previously mentioned, the Greens are investing in a national transportation strategy, not only to open up trade barriers across our borders, but to increase the opportunity for communities to have great trade within them. And one other thing I gotta say about this is that I'm part of the Green Party, which means that I'm not whipped by my vote. So when I go to Parliament Hill, I know that when I say to you that I would support this, and I'm going to, I know that I can vote accordingly with that. I can't say that for the rest of the members of our team here. Specifically, I just want to bring up the fact that last week at our Empire Theatre debate, we had a conversation around the CBC, and we had a discrepancy between what one of our candidates was saying that they were going to do with the CBC versus what the leadership was going to do with the CBC. And I don't want that kind of inconsistency. I don't want people lying to you when they make promises to you, when they go back to Parliament and vote against our best interests. So, yes, absolutely. I'll support that, and I will.
Thank you, Erica. Ryan, you have the final minute to close this topic.
Well, no matter what, I think at the end of the day, and I agree with Chris, I think all of us up here would say we're going to fight for 49, but I think the most important part is no matter who you elect here, you want them fighting for you, on behalf of you, for this region. And I can tell you right now, for all these issues that are here right now, I think you're going to get someone who's going to stand up and who's going to speak for all the needs. Of course, it's infrastructure. Of course, it's going to be taxes. Of course, it's going to be the growing crime rates and the growing homelessness and opioid addictions. And I think at the end of the day, when you make that vote, you're going to get a person that's going to fight for you in Ottawa each and every single day. And that's the most important part of this whole process. And I think what I can say is I know all of us will fight. I think I can look for that and say that everyone's going to fight hard for this region. We're all from here. We're all living here. We're all working here. And I think at the end of the day, what's really important when it comes down to that is to make sure when you make that vote, make sure it's the right fight for the right things that you know are going to change this region. And I can tell you right now, for all of that and everything else, I'm going to fight hard for you every single day.
Thank you. Our final question of this section of the debate, then we'll move into closing statements. This question, number 10, was submitted by the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. What specific federal health care initiatives will you champion to address the shortage of primary care physicians in Bay of Quinte, where over 20,000 residents currently lack access to a family doctor? For this one, we'll do a random draw on who leads the question. Chris, you've been selected. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. As a city councillor in the city of Belleville, and Ryan knows well this tale as well, we've had to develop a physician recruitment program funded by our own municipality. This is not right. Healthcare, as we know, is not a municipal responsibility, yet through the transfer funds and the funds we receive from from our Alexicon partnership, which is an electrical utility, we're able to fund a physician recruitment program that to date has brought more than 22 physicians to the city of Belleville. Cities, towns, and villages should not be in competition with each other to attract doctors. This simply isn't the role of municipalities. The federal government has signed an agreement with Ontario in February 2024 for $3.1 billion earmarked for healthcare over 3 years. Some of that money was for more family doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, and social workers. But as we found, unfortunately, when we send federal healthcare transfer funds to the provinces, they balk at having strings attached. For instance, the parliamentary budget officer, or the provincial auditor, sorry, for the province of Ontario, found that over the past few years, some $2 to $3 billion has gone unaccounted for on that front. A Mark Carney government is going to insist that, despite the fact provinces don't balk at having strings attached to their funding, we're going to insist on it. Also, the province is to open another 700 spots in medical education programs. The administration of healthcare is primarily a provincial responsibility. A Mark Carney government will hold their feet to the fire and ensure it's done properly.
Yeah. Erica, over to you. You have 1 minute.
The specific federal healthcare initiative is that we're going to introduce a primary healthcare act that's going to give every Canadian access to a family doctor, nurse practitioner, or community health team. We have the opportunity to resolve this issue, but we need the leadership to do it. We need to enforce the Canada Health Act to ensure that all new federal dollars go into public healthcare, not privatization. We need to invest in healthcare worker training and fair compensation. And we need to streamline credential recognition so that we can lift the doctors and nurse practitioners that we have already in our community to fulfill the roles that we need them to. And that way we can provide stable, long-term funding for provinces and territories so that this maintains with preventative healthcare, dental care, pharma care, and mental health so that we can relieve the stress on our system.
Ryan, over to you. You have 1 minute.
I'm extremely proud of one of these policies we have for doctors. I think it's the most unique, and I think it's the best policy when it comes to healthcare. It's called the Blue Seal System. So we have Red Seal for trades in Canada, which means if you're accredited as a carpenter, electrician, you can work across Canada. We've come up with a Blue Seal System for doctors and nurses. We have 20,000 doctors trained internationally in Canada right now, 34,000 nurses, and they're not able to work in Canada. So this Blue Seal program within 60 days will train those doctors, and if they meet our pathway and they meet our testing system, we'll find a way into their system. What that means for this region, right now in BGH right now, you can wait up to 13 hours for emergency care, not because of the lack of the care system, it's because of the lack of doctors. Right now we have a shortage of nurses, even nurse practitioners, which would fill the system. This system and this program is the best to be able to fill the 55 doctors that were short in this region, not only for emergency, but for general practitioner, but more importantly, for you and your family here in this region.
Kate, over to you, you have 1 minute.
Thanks. So as a mom of 4 kids, and don't worry, lady near the front, I don't need your help raising them, nor do I think I want it. And as someone who doesn't have a family doctor myself, I know exactly how frustrating and even frightening it is to navigate a healthcare system without access to primary care. If elected, I will fight for a real, meaningful federal action to address the shortage of family doctors and nurse practitioners, not just a Band-Aid solution. The NDP will champion a national recruitment and retention strategy for primary care providers, working with provinces to fund more residency spots, expand medical training in rural and underserved areas, and offer incentives for new graduates to practice in communities like ours, including student debt forgiveness tied to service in high-need areas. We also have a major untapped resource right in front of us, foreign-trained doctors and healthcare professionals who are already here in Canada but can't practice due to long, inconsistent, and costly licensing processes.
Chris, you have the final minute to close up this topic and the Q&A portion of the evening.
Well, as I addressed the primary physician question earlier, I'm going to highlight one of the our proudest programs that we're touting right now. Prime Minister Mark Carney has reaffirmed his intention to move forward with a national pharmacare program by ensuring access to diabetes medication and contraception across the country. Through our pharmacare program, we're expanding access to reproductive freedom and life-saving medication for Canadians with diabetes. With Pierre Poilievre's cuts to pharmacare, Canadians with diabetes would pay up to $1,700 more per year. 9 million Canadians would have less reproductive choices. We'll continue to work with all provinces and territories to ensure that Canadians don't have to choose between filling up their prescriptions or putting food on the table. Thank you.
Thank you all. We will now move on to the final section of the debate, which is the closing remarks. This is a very technologically advanced way of doing this. We're going to start off. Who's going to lead us is Erica. Erica, before you start, I'm just going to draw the other names. Kate, you'll be second. Ryan, you'll be third, and then whoever's left will be last. Erica, it's you. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. It's great to see such a diverse group, and I will say diverse opinions generate great ideas. It's important that you're all at the table, and it's important that we're all here having this conversation. I know that there is a lot of animosity in the audience, and I need to know, were you saying boo or boo-erns? It's a lot of name calling, and again, to the lady in the front, if you do not want to take care of my child, I will take care of yours, and that's a great thing. You, middle class, that are willing to make sacrifices to make sure that everybody has a seat at the table and that we are all taken care of. So This might be the last opportunity that I have to talk to you. I'm not going to talk more about divisionary politics and what they're not going to do and what they haven't done up to this point, but we're going to talk about what they are going to do. We are going to get everybody a home, and we are going to get everybody a doctor. We're going to get everybody mental health access, because we know that you need to invest in your people. And we have a lot of great entrepreneurs in this area, and they know that you need to invest in your people. One of the opportunities I had was with a company in Glentel, and they taught me that the more training, the more development that you can give somebody, the more success that you're going to get out of them in the end. And that's how I see with Canadians. We need to be investing in you, and you need to be investing in each other. This is not the opportunity that we need for you to be yelling and name-calling each other. What I need you to do is to go out and hold hands with your neighbor and say, it's okay, this is hard, we're going to get through this. We've never had to deal with so many tragedies at the same time, losing our friends to the south, the climate crisis that we're experiencing. This is an affordability crisis, but it's also a humanity crisis. When I say that I love you guys because I need you to love each other, and we need to work together, and we need our politicians to work for us to make sure that they get the job done, and we're bringing successes in 4 years.
Jane, you now have the mic for your closing statements, and you have 2 minutes.
I'd like to start by thanking the Prince Edward County Chamber of Commerce for organizing this final debate, and thank you all for being here. I hope this debate has shown you how truly different the party stances are on the issues that matter to you. I know that all of us are worried about a palliative government. I know that many of you are thinking of strategic voting and worried about vote splitting. Some of you have gone so far as to tell me and other NDP candidates to step down to avoid splitting the left. I will reiterate one last time, this is a dangerous precedent to set. If Tommy Douglas had stepped down, you would be paying thousands of dollars for every midnight trip to the Picton Emerge when your kid has a fever and you don't know what to do. Everyone told Jack Layton to step down too. Instead, he doubled down on building the party's national presence so we could bring you programs like dental care and affordable child care. I started the evening by telling you why I stood up. This is why I will not stand down. The erasure of the left is not an option. If you're thinking of voting blue, take a look at the things that have actually made a difference in your life lately. Unless your annual income is more than six figures, the money in your pocket is because of the NDP. If you're worried about Trump, voting blue puts us uncomfortably close to the destructive policies his government perpetuates. If you're voting late liberal, you are voting for a right-of-center government. The valuable social programs that take care of you, like dental and pharmacare, are only in place because the NDP made it happen. There is no guarantee they will remain. Leading economists agree the NDP's plan is the best to make life more affordable. So if you want a face you know, if you want to be able to afford groceries, healthcare, and education, and live in a country and a county that takes care of you, only a vote for the NDP will do that.
Thank you. Ryan, over to you. You have 2 minutes for your closing remarks.
Well, thank you to the Prince Edward County Chamber for hosting this. It's been great being here in this historical spot. And like all our candidates have mentioned, it's great having the discussion. This is such an important election. And the ballot question, I think, when I've walked around, I've been 14,000 doors in the last 5 weeks, has come to this. Is it time for change?
Yes.
After 10 years, is it time for change? We've had a government that's been in. We have the same MPs, the same bureaucrats. Give them credit. They've tried everything they can. They've thrown every bit of money that we have from Canada into these problems. But do we have the solutions? Do we have the solutions? And we want to look at the solutions. We have to look at change. And change comes with different platforms and different ideas. And I can tell you right now, change for Prince Edward County will mean this. It means we get Pinecrest built, done, and finished, and get people in that door right away. Change means we get Highway 49 funded. So we get that with the province done, so that's done right away. Change means for our local businesses, we drop the taxes. We make sure we get rid of the carbon tax as a whole. Forever and forever. Change means doctors. Doctors for our families. Doctors for our new hospital in Prince Edward County. Change means also that we fix the crime, that those that are doing harm go behind bars, those that are dealing fentanyl, those that are harming our children, they go behind bars, those that are killing our citizens from fentanyl go behind bars for a very long time. And we make sure change means you also get to choose what kind of car you want to drive. Whether that be a hybrid, a gas, or electric. It shouldn't be the government's control. It should be your choice. And that's what we're giving you in this election. This is your choice in election to go out and pick a government that's going to put you back in charge of your life to make sure that we change the way we do things with new ideas, great ideas that are going to help bring, restore just the basics for Canada. It's incredible we're discussing the basics. Food, making sure that we look at housing, making sure affordability, that's what we're bringing to you. Real change, vote conservative, we want change. Thank you.
Chris, you have the final word and the opportunity to close out this debate. You have 2 minutes.
It's quite an honor, thank you. I want to thank the Prince Edward County Chamber of Commerce and the Prince Edward Federation of Agriculture for sponsoring this evening. And all of you who are here tonight, as we've said time and again, this is one of the most, if not the most important elections of our lifetime. Mark Carney's platform is about housing, infrastructure, military funding, farmer support, and the environment amongst many. But Mark Carney's policies will guide Canada through these turbulent times, and I support and trust his plans. I do not trust Mr. Poilievre's agenda. He voted against affordable housing, $10 a day daycare, dental care, pharmacare, same-sex marriage, the Canadian Child Benefit, free contraceptives and diabetic medications, national school food program, and he voted 400 times against environmental protections. Pierre Poilievre does not believe in change. Is this the person as you want as your next Prime Minister?
Yes!
Mark Carney's team stands for Canada strong. He is still the most qualified person to lead our country, and we're hearing it every day at the doors. I respectfully request your vote on April 28th for myself, for Team Carney, for Canada strong.
I'll be handing things over to my compatriot here, Dwart. I just want to say thank you and you know what a treat it's been to be in this room at this historic Regent Theatre. We're so fortunate to have a place like this where we can congregate. And it's so great to be in a room full of friends and neighbors. You're all going to get a hug from me. You know you will.